Theology in
September 28, 2013 in Kona, Hawaii.
Three children, 12 grandchildren, and she is now in the Renounced Order of Life Vows of Renunciation. Please help me welcome Mother Ornella.
Albert Einstein asked the question, is the universe friendly? You ever asked that question? Is it friendly or not?
It's friendly.
It's friendly. All right. Well, if it's friendly, best we make friends with it. So that's what I wanted to look at tonight. Can we trust God, and can God trust us? So in Sanskrit, this is called Sakya. Sakya means friendship. And it's one of nine processes of bhakti yoga to become the friend of Krishna. So we're going to go back about 5,000 years to when Krishna was an avatar on the earth. And at that time, there was a great political upheaval. The queen's name was Kunti. But before she was queen, when she was a princess, her father had entertained one yogi. While he was entertaining the yogi, Princess Kunti, who was at that time very young, 13, 14, not more than 15, she was serving the guests with great attention. And so the yogi said to her, I'd like to offer you a blessing in return for your service. What would you like? And she said, well, I didn't serve you for any exchange. It's just my honor to serve a guest. He said, well, I insist that you get some blessing. And she said, well, I don't really need anything. But since you can see into the future, you'll know what I'll need in my life. So why don't you give me something that I'll need? And he said, all right, here is this mantra. That if you say this mantra, you can call any of the celestial beings who govern the universe. And perhaps, unfortunately for Princess Kunti, he didn't give her any more information than that. So the yogi left, and one day she was thinking, wow, I have this mantra. I can call any of the planetary rulers, any of the celestial beings in the universe. Does it work? Is it real? What will it do? And she was sitting in her room and she saw the sun and she said, why don't I check it out? I'll call for the ruler of the sun. And she was just a young girl. She was curious. So she chanted the mantra calling for the sun god. And then her room fills up with light. And then there's this person in her room. And he said, I'm here. I've come to father a child with you at your request. She says, well, what? He says, I'm just a young girl and we're not married. And what is this? And he said, well, but I don't have any choice. He said, you chanted a seduction mantra. And I'm bound by the rules of the mantra. I don't have an option. She said, what am I going to do? And he said, well, what I can do is after the birth of the child, I can transform your body back to its virginal state. That's most I can do for you. So, somehow or other, she was able to keep her pregnancy secret in the palace. And after the child was born, she didn't know what to do. And with the help of some of the servants in the palace, she put him in a basket and put him in the Ganga, in the river Ganges that flowed outside of her palace. Later, she got married to the world emperor, and she never told anybody of this story. And later, she became the empress, the queen of the world. Meanwhile, her little baby wasn't an ordinary baby. Having been fathered by the sun, he was born with natural earrings and armor. He wasn't born an ordinary child. And he was raised by a servant. He was raised by a chariot driver, somebody who would serve in the military but wasn't himself royalty. But he had, being the son of the sun and a princess, he had a royal disposition. He had a warrior disposition. And he was born in a society that didn't have, shall we say, a lot of vertical mobility. So being the son of a chariot driver, he didn't have facility to inherit a kingdom. He was a very frustrated young man. When Kunti's sons by the emperor had finished their education, they were going to have a graduation ceremony where they were going to display their military skills to all of society. And Kunti's son by the sun god, whose name was Karna, which sounds very much like karma, but it's Karna, he decided, I'm going to go there to the graduation ceremony of these princes, and I'm going to show that I'm just as good as any of them. So he comes into the arena where they're showing off their different skills with weaponry. And in those days, people didn't have just fire weapons like we have today, but they had wind weapons and water weapons and all sorts of subtle mystic weapons. And anything that Kunti's sons were able to do, he was able to do. Now, Kunti immediately recognized that he was her son, because how many people have natural earrings and armor? So as soon as she saw him, she thought, oh, that's my son that I abandoned at birth. And she fainted, which was noticed by a courtier. But anyway, that's another long story. So when Karna came to compete with the princes, one of them objected and said, who are you? You're not royalty. You're not a prince. Who are you anyway? And he gave his adopted parentage. And they said, that's not good enough. You can't come here. You're not one of us. Then one of their cousins, who was a very, very evil and cruel man, who committed a number of murders and stuff in his life, but again, it's a long story, he saw this Karna and he thought, this is someone who could get me the throne. This is someone who could throw out Kunti's sons and get me the throne. He's powerful. If I make friends with him, I'll get what I want. And he went up to Karna and he said, I give you part of my kingdom to rule. I will crown you as the king of one of my areas. Ah, now he's royalty and he can compete. And Karna looked at him and said, I promise you that I will give you anything you want in exchange. I will give you my life if necessary in exchange. He didn't realize when he was making that bargain that he was making a bargain with a very evil man. He just felt great gratitude. So the story is rather complex, but Kunti's son and their cousin ended up at odds over the years. The cousin tried to kill Kunti's sons on many occasions by poisoning them, by burning down their house. He cheated them out of their kingdom. He exiled them. Finally, it came down to a war. And if any of you have read the Bhagavad Gita, this war is where the Bhagavad Gita takes place, on this battlefield. So right before the war was going to start, Kunti, who was by that time an elderly widow, went to her son Karna at a time of the day when he would give in charity to anyone who came. And she said, I would like to ask some charity from you. He said, what would you like? And she said, I'd like you to know that you're actually my son. And the charity I'd like is that you don't fight in this war against my other sons, who are in reality your half-brothers. And he said, sorry, mother. He said, it's too late. You don't ask anything of me. You don't acknowledge your relationship with me until your other children are in danger. Forget it. He said, the only thing I'll promise you is that I will kill only at most one of your sons. He said, everyone knows you're the mother of five sons. They don't know about me. So if I kill one of them, you'll still be known as the, you'll still have five sons. He said, I won't give you anything. That is actually very pathetic. They're meeting. But after that, Krishna, the avatar of the Supreme Lord, came to see Karna. And he said, Karna, I want to tell you that you're actually Kunti's son. He said, yes, I know that now. He said, you don't owe any allegiance to that evil cousin. But you've already done so much for him in exchange for being made a king. And Karna said, yes, I know he's an evil man. He said, when I made that promise, I didn't know who he was, but now I see that in exchange for the kingdom and my prestige, I sold myself to an evil man. But still, I made a promise. A promise is a promise. And Krishna said to him, you know, you're really the oldest son of Kunti. You could really rule the world instead of her children. He said, I'm not really interested in that. I'm just interested in keeping my promise. And Krishna said, but that evil cousin, he's going to lose. He's going to be destroyed because he's the forces of evil. And Karna says, I know, but still I made a promise. And Krishna says, if you come to me and you forget all of these things, you'll not only achieve rulership of the world, but you'll also achieve inner peace and enlightenment and ultimate spiritual realization. And Karna said, no. I have a debt, he said. I have a debt. He said, my mother abandoned me. The world abandoned me. I was known as a low-class person because of my birth. I didn't have anything. This is the only person who believed in me. This is the only person who did anything for me. Krishna said, but he didn't do it for you. He did it to use you. And Karna says, okay, that's all right. I promised him and that's it. I will sacrifice enlightenment and spiritual bliss to fulfill my promise. That's exactly what he did. And he died in the battle, at which time Kunti was mourning him and the whole story was revealed. The unfortunate thing is that most of us don't really believe that the universe is a friendly place. We are very caught up in, I have to do this and I have to do that, and this person owes me this and I owe this person that. And I have to be the controller of my fate and what is my prestige, who are my friends, who are my enemies. I was one time meditating on this story that I realized that karma is not exactly a universal law that's forced upon us, but it's rather something that we willingly accept, thinking, all right, I did something bad to this person, I've got to pay it back. Or this person did something bad to me, I've got to accept paying it back. And we're going on in this life, and life after life after life, trying to get everything even and trying to look for closure and trying to find peace by getting closure and refusing the path of enlightenment because we want to settle things in this world. And when we do that, we see this world in terms of friends and enemies. We see this world in terms of what do I owe you? What do you owe me? Our relationships become contaminated with this philosophy and this way of looking at things. Blaming and defending. You're the person who did this. No, I didn't do this. And we lose out on the fact that really that's not what the universe is about. I think of material consciousness as like playing a big Monopoly game. So in a Monopoly game, I owe you money and you owe me money, but it's all fake money. You took my hotel, you gave me this, but it's all pieces of plastic. It doesn't really mean anything. And when we're in this consciousness, we do not see the universe as a friendly place. We see the universe as a very antagonistic place. We see nature as being our enemy. We see other people. Are they my enemy? Are they my friends? Are they going to help me? Are they going to hurt me? We see our body antagonistically. We become the enemy even of our own body and our own mind. And therefore, we have so much suffering. But all of that is an illusion. Not an illusion in the sense that it doesn't exist, but illusion in the sense that we're perceiving it wrongly. We're thinking the Monopoly game is reality, it's just a game. And in the Bhagavad Gita, the very end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarva dharman paricca jama me kam shamam vajam tam sarva kape dhyama kshi shamam asu jama. Forget about all these identities in this world. I am this, I am that. This person is my friend, that person is my enemy. I have to do this and that and this and that in this world to be happy. And this person owes me and I owe this person. I have to finish this and I have to close this. Forget about that. and just surrender. He said, I'll take care of everything. Don't worry. Masuchaha. You won't owe anyone anything, and nobody will owe you anything. You'll be free. Now, the caveat is you can't stay in the game and say, I don't owe you anything. That doesn't work. You can't keep playing the Monopoly game and not pay your Monopoly debts. But you can quit the game. You don't have to play the game of karma. It's not required. If we want to play it, we'll have to play by the rules. And that will be imposed upon us. But you don't have to play the game. Instead, we can say, Krishna, you're my friend, and I'm your friend. I trust you, and you can trust me. So someone here today was telling me that for recreation, they like to go swimming with sharks. It's like, wow, I thought I led a pretty crazy life. And I was thinking about also the Bhagavad Gita said that among all fish, I am the shark, and among all bodies of water, I am the ocean. I thought, okay, to go in the ocean and swim with the sharks is a lot of surrender. It's facing your fears. Pretty heavy fears, huh? And surrendering. Whatever happens, happens. She was telling me, everybody's going to die. We're going to have our time to die. And when we die, we're going to die. I thought, that's pretty cool. And not that I'm going to go swimming with sharks. That should be our move towards Krishna. I let go. I go for enlightenment. Now, of course, the person who goes for enlightenment, generally speaking, will look externally like a very moral and responsible person of this world, but they'll no longer be a moral and responsible person of this world because they want to play a game. They'll be a moral and responsible person because someone who's enlightened is naturally moral and responsible, not to achieve something, not because they have any debts, because they're free. Then we actually give ourselves to Krishna. Say, Krishna, you do with me what you like. You can protect me. You can kill me. You can give me material opulence. You can give me material poverty. You can give me health. You can give me sickness. It doesn't matter because I want to be on the platform of enlightenment and freedom. That I know I have nothing to do with this monopoly game. I have nothing to do with this body that I happen to inhabit very temporarily. Or even this mind that I happen to inhabit very temporarily. Nothing to do with this. I'm going to trust the higher thing. Real religion, my dear friends, is not about being a good person in the world. I mean, better be a good person in the world than be a bad person in the world. But that's not what religion is about. Religion isn't about family values and being patriotic. And that's what the Bhagavad Gita calls the mode of passion. The mode of ignorance is, you know, criminality and drug dealing and cheating and stealing. The mode of passion is, I'm a builder and a shaker in the world, and I have status. And there'll be a statue erected to me after I'm gone, as if you're going to care after you're gone. As if when you're in your next body, you're going to know that there's a statue for you in the park, and it's going to give you some kind of happiness. That's not religion or spiritual. One has to come to sattvagun, to the mode of goodness, where one doesn't play the game anymore. I trust Krishna. I trust that your plan for my life is perfect. Even if it's a little unconventional, even if it has some twists and turns I didn't quite anticipate, even if it's a roller coaster ride, whee! I surrender to the adventure, to the excitement, to the surprise, to the not always knowing. Who always wants to know the ending? What do they call that? A spoiler? No? Hey, Krishna, I'm going to go for your ride. I want to become transcendental. And you can trust me. I'm going to trust that you're my friend. And you can trust that I'm your friend. So there's a lot of people that say we can trust that the universe is our friend or that God is our friend. But a lot of those people just say that we should start demanding all sorts of things. Okay, universe, you got 48 hours? give me my new car. It's like, okay, that might happen, but how am I being a friend of the universe if I do that? I mean, do I treat my friends like that? So if I have a really nice friend, they might do that for me, but they'd say, well, wait a minute, are you being my friend? So this sakya process is, I trust that you're my friend. I trust that you're giving me everything perfectly that I need and everything that I want. It says, nitya nitya nan chaitanya chaitanya nan ekabhavanam yovedati kama. Among all the eternals, that's all of us, there's one eternal. Among all the living beings, there's one living being. Ekabhavanam, one among many. Yovedati kama. Kama means desire. Who's fulfilling everyone's desire. That Krishna's fulfilling everyone's desire. Really, all of existence is a big desire machine. But it's not a machine, it's a friend. It's like a vending machine, it's a friend. And we want to be a friend to that friend. How can I be a friend to God? How can I be a friend to Krishna? And so it's really interesting. In one of the sacred writings of India, the Bhagavad Purana, also called the Srimad Bhagavatam, it said that the color of the Absolute Truth, the color of God, of Krishna, is sort of this darkish, blackish, bluish color. That's the ultimate color of amorous love. And it says that the rain clouds are sometimes called Krishna's friends because they can have a similar color. How did that matter? And I guess it really hit me. I travel a lot. In fact, for many years, I didn't even have a home. People would say, where do you live? I'd say, well, I don't really live anywhere. I just travel. And they'd say, well, when you're not traveling, where do you live? I said, well, but there isn't any such place. And then they'd say, well, where do you stay the most? And I'd say, which month? So that was for about 7 years I did that. And I remember once in China, I'd been in China for a while, and China's one of those countries where people just don't know English. Most of the places you can go in the world, you can pretty much count that people will know English. You know, the signs and the airports are going to be in the local language and English. But China's one of those countries not like that. Other than my translator, nobody spoke English. Not even hello. You know, not a word. So I was in the airport, and ahead of me in the line were some people speaking English, and not only English, but English with an American accent. And not only an American accent, you can all tell I'm not from Hawaii, right? But a Northeastern American accent. I'm from New York. Okay. So all of a sudden, I felt like I was connected to these people. I felt like they were my friends. It was really bizarre. I said, oh, are you from America? Oh, yeah, where are you from? Oh, we're from Connecticut. Oh, really? I was born in New York. And we had this immediate feeling of kinship. I find it even happens on an airplane. You know, you're sitting on a plane with people for a couple hours, and all of a sudden you feel some connection with them. Like, I don't have my own mobile phone. And if people don't kind of pick me up at the airport, I have to ask someone, can I borrow your phone? Now, I find if I ask someone who was on the flight with me, they're more likely to lend me their phone. Isn't that weird? Even if I didn't say anything to them or sit anywhere near them on the plane. You know, somehow when we share some characteristics with somebody, we feel a sort of kinship with them. You know, they come from the same place, they speak the same language, or they're the same color, or they're the same religion, or they're the same something. We feel, oh, I have some sort of oneness with these people. So therefore the clouds are sometimes called Krishna's friends, because they have a similar color, and because they do a similar function. That they pour rain, which nourishes everyone. And just like that, Krishna's nourishing everyone. So if we want to be Krishna's friend, then we should also be like him in that we nourish everyone, that we are givers. We are designed to get happiness from giving. Krishna is a supreme giver. He gives even to those who hate him, those who decry him. He gives even to the worst criminals. The criminals that we wouldn't even want to say what they do, and still he gives sun and rain and everything. So we, as part of Krishna, we are little fragmental godly beings. Not part like you take all the pieces of paper and put it together and you have a whole piece of paper. We're part more like a sun is the part of the parents. But we, as part of Krishna, we also have this nature to give and to find much more happiness in giving than in taking, which we all experience. That we can get much more pleasure from spending $100 on a gift than spending $100 on ourselves. That we can get more pleasure by sacrificing for others than by doing something for ourselves. So that's how we become the friend of God. We become a giver, and we become a giver of the best thing, which is love for God and friendship with Krishna. That we try to bring other people into friendship with Krishna. We try to get other people to understand the universe is a friendly place. It's not a place of friends and enemies. It's not a place of I owe you and you owe me. It's not a place where we have to find material closure. Okay, all right, let me fix this relationship and fix this relationship and fix this and make this. And it's not that kind of a place. It's a place of love. It's a place of friendship. It's a place of peace. It's a place of harmony, if we choose to see it like that. We are being invited, like Karna was being invited by Krishna, come. And he said, no. My guru said, the whole world is full of Krishna singing. We know that every atom is moving, and in the movement is vibration. And vibration means there's a sound. And what is that sound? That sound is the singing of God. And he said, everywhere Krishna is dancing, and we can choose to dance with him, or we can choose to dance alone or dance with somebody else. So if we choose to live our lives in harmony with the singing and dancing of God, that he's my friend, the universe is friendly, and I am going to be a friend to God, then we come to whatever, everything we really want, love and peace and freedom and joy, but not just peace like, but adventure peace, excitement peace, surprise peace, even scary peace. Does that make sense to anybody? A peace knowing that I'm eternal, I can't be hurt, I can't die, I'm not born, I don't die, I don't get old, I don't get sick, that's just the body. I'm an eternal being, a part of God. Nobody can ever do anything harmful to me. The only person who can harm me is myself, and the only way I can harm myself is to forget who I am and to forget that I can't be harmed. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I can only harm myself by putting myself into illusion that I can harm myself. I can't actually even harm myself. So therefore, peace. Just like, why do people like to see, you know, movies with adventure and scary? Because they're safe. They're sitting in the chair in the movie theater. But it's exciting. So something like that. That, you know, you're peaceful. You have security. You have everything. And then everything becomes an adventure. And everything becomes fun. So that is the understanding of Krishna, that he engaged in these leelas, like we saw. Leela means sport or pastime, play, fun. The ultimate reality is not just light. It is certainly light, but it is not just light. And the ultimate reality is not just some people in the clouds singing Gloria, Gloria. And the ultimate reality is not a big man in a suit just saying, heaven, hell. Oh, boring. My life's more interesting than that. The ultimate reality is youthful pastimes and adventures and play and games of love. That is the ultimate reality. So the ultimate reality is my friend, and I am his friend. Mutual. And then we come to what we want. So, if you're interested in pursuing this, that one can practice this simply by changing one's mentality. And just this one thing, this practice of sakya, that alone can bring one enlightenment. Just doing that, living as if the universe is my friend and I am a friend of the universe. Krishna is my friend and I am Krishna's friend. I trust Krishna and he can trust me. Just that is enough. Generally, if we think like that, we would also engage in studying about reality and talking about it and absorbing our consciousness in reality and singing about the ultimate reality. And therefore we have kirtan, and therefore we have chanting, and therefore we have study. So if you want to go further and deeper and broader, we have some books on the table, and also we'd be happy to talk to any of you if you want to integrate any of this practice into your life. I want to say I really feel honored to come and speak to all of you. That I was really thinking about this, that there aren't that many people on the planet that are interested in ultimate reality. They just aren't. You know, try talking about it with people and they'll say, hey, okay, let's go get a pizza. Right? I mean, it's just... So, thank you. Thank you very much. Most people, they fit into one of two categories. Either I just want to get some happiness right now, I don't care what the future cost is for me or for anybody else, you know, let's just eat this thing or do this thing or drink this thing or smoke this thing or watch this thing. However many people are being hurt, however much I'm hurting myself, however much I'm hurting my family or hurting somebody in another part of the world or some animal, whatever, who cares? I just want happiness right now. Or then there's people who, I want to be a good person in the world. I want to make and build and do and be famous and be righteous and be respected and be religious. So most people fit into one of those two categories. And most people are not saying, no, what I want is, I want that feeling of friendship and love with the Supreme Absolute Truth. Thank you very much.
Mother Mila will be speaking tomorrow. You thought you're not possible.